Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Fan Gamer Podcast, episode number 154. I'm Charlie, your host this week. I'm here with Jeff Benson,
hello.
Heidi Mandolin, and Ben Kerrigan.
Yeah.
And this week we're going to be talking about GDC, which is the Game Developers Conference, which took place in San Francisco, because several of our people were actually there, not at the conference itself, but in the general area. So today we're going to be talking about what they experienced, the sort of people they saw, and also we have a couple of segments from other people who experienced it through osmosis, as well as some people who experienced it directly. And in fact, that's how we're going to start off. We have a segment that Ben recorded with Ashley and Anthony Birch, and because they were actually there, because they're actually involved in this industry.
Unlike us.
Anthony Birch, I'm a writer at Gearbox Software.
I'm Ashley Birch, and I'm a voice actor.
Yeah, it's a week-long thing where everybody that's in the games industry that wants to go either do business or check out sessions or just hobnob sort of goes. It's less enthusiast like PAX and E3. It's more just for professionals to sort of hang out.
Lots of sessions on a variety of topics. There are a bunch of different tracks like advocacy and...
Yeah, first 2 days had the narrative summit, and then there was the advocacy track. Basically, if you come to GDC with a particular specialization, in my case writing, there's tracks for pretty much everything.
There's also an expo floor where you can go see tech or games being demoed.
Yeah, the IGF, all the IGF nominated games were there. GDC is actually pretty good for both AAA and indie developers because there's a whole segment of the entire GDC that's just the IGF track. So there, you can go to the IGF awards, you can play the IGF games, and there are a bunch of sessions about indie games themselves. And almost every single one of them I went to was just packed. One-to-ones for Kentucky Route Zero, one for the Molly Jam, one for... it was just the anti-chamber guy and a dude from Double Fine talking about, here's practical things you need to know about how to show your indie game at E3 and all that kind of stuff. It was very helpful in that regard. And if you're AAA, then there's Assassin's Creed talking about how they did their narrative stuff, to the Bungie guys talking about where they're going with Destiny and all that kind of stuff. It's actually got a very good spread, in my opinion.
This year they added the advocacy track, right? This is the first year. So the advocacy track is about sort of like the social responsibility of games, potentially, or like the inclusion of minority groups and women into either like representation in games or folding those individuals more into the industry. Anita Sarkeesian gave a talk. Brenda Romero did as well.
That was part of the One Reason to Be panel.
And that was really interesting. There's also the Game Design Challenge. It was the last one.
The Game Design Challenge was incredibly interesting this time around. So every GDC, there is a thing headed up by Eric Zimmerman called the Game Design Challenge, where a bunch of game designers get a challenge that sounds absolutely absurd and have to make a game that fits that criteria. So this time around, being as it was the last Game Design Challenge, the challenge was make the last game humanity will ever play. And Will Wright came up with this cool thing about like trying to get cultural consciousness sort of into a video game, have everybody vote on, you know, memories that are most important. Harvey Smith, who did Dishonored, had an immersive sim that, like, when you played it, the game would record the things you did and then play it back as ghosts to anybody else who played the game, so you'd sort of see how people reacted in this environment about, like, trying to save lives and stuff. And then, yeah, Jason Rohrer knocked it out of the park by making a game that actually will take 2,000 years to even find because it's encased in titanium. Made out of titanium and buried somewhere randomly in the Nevada desert, so that no one can find it for at least 2,000 years.
Is this an actual thing he did?
Yes.
Yeah. He showed us all the slides.
He designed a game board game, and essentially balanced it through like AI play. So
because he didn't want any human to play it. The way he thought about it is that in 2,000 years, when somebody finds it, that'll be the next stage of human evolution. So it won't be humans, will be post-human or something like that. So we want to make sure he couldn't play the game. So like Ash said, he created an AI to balance and play test the game, which, to be honest, probably isn't going to work. Like, I bet in 2,000 years, like, you know, the next generation of humans is going to find the game and be like, isn't that good? But, like, the work he just put into it was pretty impressive, nonetheless. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stuff at GDC that I feel like part of me wishes I had known outside of GDC, because it seems like information everybody should know, like Tom Abernathy's talk about how the demographics are changing. Basically, the demographics are switching such that young boys are now outnumbered by adult women in terms of people who play video games. And if that is true, then we are doing a really shitty job of catering to that audience, because the majority of video game protagonists and video game characters and people in the industry are, you know, white 30-year-old males. And that was really encouraging to hear all these statistics. Like, no, here's what you now use as ammunition in any meeting from now on, saying, no, this is why it's okay to have a black or female or gay or transgender protagonist. The fact that there was an advocacy track at all was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And the fact that when we went to the One Reason to Be talk, there were a lot of people there, and that there was this very... I got the sense personally that there was a concerted effort to try and be more inclusive and try to sort of hit these issues head on rather than making them sort of fringe complaints. I don't know how you felt about that.
I felt pretty invigorated actually leaving, especially after the game design challenge. It just seemed like there was a lot of innovative stuff happening there and a lot of good conversations. I didn't experience it such like a visceral personal level outside of UDC. It's a really good place to meet people, I know. Last GDC, I wasn't actually in GDC. I was kind of just on the fringes talking to people, and that way I still met a crap load of people. And this time I met even more people. So just through having friends, or everyone's all in the same place, so it's much easier to network, I suppose, and to meet people that you're interested in or that you might want to collaborate with.
It is the best place I know of to meet new people in your field. I mean, I got the job at Gearbox because of going to a GDC a couple of years ago, just because I met Mikey and, you know, he was sort of covertly interviewing me for the job at Gearbox. And, you know, this time around I met Steve Gaynor and Drew Holmes and Jay Posey and all these really neat people that I just wouldn't have met otherwise, because it's, you know, everybody's sort of scattered to the wind, but having all these people with very similar ideals sort of converge on this one location for a week is really nice.
If your goals are to network, then potentially it's not necessary to actually go into GDC and like attend the sessions and stuff. But if you're trying to improve your craft or, I guess, broaden your mind in a way, then attending the sessions can be really good. I mean, like even just having gone to the Game Design Challenge, I felt really sort of like inspired and excited to be part of the industry again. So those sorts of moments, I think, are well worth actually attending GDC proper rather than just hanging out on the fringes. But obviously not everyone has the money to attend, and I think it's definitely worth better to come than not. And you can definitely get a lot out of the experience just by being around when it's happening.
Yeah, there's also an element of, you know, if you're at the conference proper and seeing sessions, there's an element of like, ooh, celebrities. Like, I got this, you know, we got to watch Jason Rohrer do this crazy thing alongside Will Wright and Aaron Robinson and, you know, all these cool people. And I got to sit down and watch Hideo Kojima come out to a packed crowd 5 minutes late wearing a bunch of bandages on his face just being weird. And then he showed us a trailer for The Phantom Pain, and then he went, did you like it? And then it was just the weirdest, coolest thing to sort of see. And I, you know, I wouldn't have been able to see that anywhere else. It was neat. Yeah, for me it was a matter of leaving with knowledge, practical knowledge about stuff. Because there's a lot of preaching to the choir at GDC and sort of saber rattling and you know, ranting, and that's useful for some people. But for me, I sort of came there wanting to get very practical advice and things to use. So Tom Abernathy's talk is really good. There was a talk by, I don't remember the guy's name, but there was a narrative summit talk that was just like, here are different ways to write characters, depending on how big your cast size is. So, and he took all these examples from like, you know, good cop, bad cop, all the way up to like a five character thing, which was like using really, you know, concrete, really relatable examples like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles plus Splinter, or like for the three man team that's, you know, Harry, Hermione and Ron, or Blossom, Bubbles and Buttercup. I don't want to sound like I don't like the sort of heady philosophical, you know, what can games be talk, because I do. It was just, you can sort of get that anywhere online. It's nice to get the practical straight from the horse's mouth at GDC.
I guess some sort of sense of a next step in whatever field you happen to be in, either because you met a good contact or you had a really good conversation or you saw a really good session that made you feel like, okay, this is what I can do now. This is my next step when I get back to wherever I go. Like going to Tom Abernathy's talk and like feeling like you left with ammunition, like this is now what I can tell my peers when I go back to work, like to fight for this character that I want or whatever. I feel like if you leave with like a next step, then it's like a GDC.
So what do you guys know about GDC in the first place? Like, what is it? What is GDC?
I think it's a much more focused conference. I guess maybe like a... Is it like an invite-only convention thing?
Well, it might as well be, because essentially it's like an expo for people in the industry. Yeah. And a badge, even if you're going for like indie games and stuff, is at least $500. And if you want a badge that's actually worth more than that, it's like a couple of thousand. So it's essentially invite only. You essentially, like, the only way you can feasibly go there without paying intense, insane fees is if, like, you like work for a company in the industry and like they all buy badges like on company dime or something like that.
Yeah. So in that sense, it's that kind of a gathering. It's not the same as PAX. Or any of those things where if you are lucky enough to, I guess, buy a ticket to such a convention or expo in time, you can go to them no matter who you are. Here you either have to be rich or in the industry. And so that's kind of exclusive.
Or you can also be poor and just go.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is that what you did?
That is what both of us did.
You're talking about the osmosis experience.
Yes.
The impression I got was that you could go there if you wanted to be a part of the industry, but you weren't yet.
So no, you totally can.
So it's an excellent way to go inside and start meeting people. But the impression I'm getting from you guys is that, all right, well, you can do that if you're pretty rich in the first place. That's sort of like the idea of, you can make a small fortune of this thing, off of this idea, but you have to start off with a large fortune.
Not necessarily. Like, I have a lot of friends here in the LA area that actually did spring for, like, the Indie Summit badges. And they're just regular people who do want to get in the industry. And even most of the people I know who go to GDC, even people who do have, like, all-access badges, like, they all pretty much say that, like, the most they get out of GDC as far as networking goes and meeting people from the industry does not come from what the badge grants them more than it is the experiences you have outside the walls and at parties and dinners and meetups and stuff. So GDC is very much two different experiences. There are things you can get from the actual conference itself, as we talked about with Anthony and Ashley. But there are way more benefits to be seen elsewhere. Not saying that one is more valuable than the other. I think, like, the conference needs to exist for, like, the talks and showing off games and such. But as far as networking goes, like, you don't need a badge for that.
That's pretty good then. And, like, in the end, being able to just go out there and talk to people and use your own personality is potentially more valuable to you as a as somebody trying to break into the industry than, you know, having the money to get a badge.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or at least equally as useful.
Yeah, like, I mean, if you are actually making games and, like, want to, I don't know, like, workshop ideas with others, going to, like, sessions and talks and stuff like that is invaluable and something you absolutely want to do if you can. But again, yeah, that's it only serves one side of the whole thing.
It's kind of makes me interested in the PAX Dev, which sounds like it's trying to be something very similar to GDC. I mean, they're both aimed at the actual developers of games to actually have them gather and talk about things. In the case of PAX Dev, it's in the days before PAX, mm-hmm. to where everybody is, you're already in town, you might as well just show up a few days early and start gathering and talking to everybody before the big event hits.
Yeah, I've heard a whole lot about that.
I did know one person who did go there, and that was Ryan Novak, Carrie Fry's husband. Yeah. And he said that it is pretty boring. it's all lectures and stuff like that. It's an interesting concept, and I'd like to hope that eventually they're going to make it more accessible even for game developers, but mm-hmm. who knows. It's an interesting idea in any case.
Yeah, for
sure. At these conferences for developers, let's paint a picture for people. Do they have big old booths that they spend thousands of dollars on, or is this just people with little badges that say, I work at this game studio, and like a meet and greet type of thing.
I don't know too much about how it looks from an attendee perspective at GDC, but from what I gathered about PAX Dev, it's very much you go into a hotel, there's all these conference rooms, and there's scheduled panels, and so you either attend the panels and listen to people talk and then do the Q&A, or you're just miling about and talking with people that that you just feel like talking with. Mm. And either way, it's just sort of a place for you to gather, and it's a mix between the two, but nothing like the exhibition hall at PAX, where there's all these big displays and trying to get people to go show up.
That's actually not true. There is an expo hall at GDC, actually multiple. There was the main expo hall, and then there was another room called like GDC Play, where for not too much money, I suppose, you could get a booth just to show off your game to whoever is coming by. But they do have like a flashy big expo hall with games that you can try out. And that's a lot of where the IGF games, like most of the indie games, were held. And yeah, I mean, it's just the same as PAX or E3 or anything like that, where you have like people manning booths. So it is that booth experience, but there are also people walking around handing out business cards that you can talk to and meet and stuff.
Yeah, I figured GDC was going to be a bit different, being a much bigger bigger event. Mm-hmm. So what were you guys expecting going into the culture of GDC, the culture expanding around the actual conference?
I've only been involved with Fangamer for a couple of years in an official capacity. Before being employed by Fangamer, I really wasn't educated in what the gaming industry was, what kind of people were in it. I know that there probably was a time way back when if you made games, you probably didn't make a lot of money, and you probably were looked at as somebody who made kids' things, you know? Whereas now, you go to something like GDC, and you kind of see a lot of young people who are really enthusiastic about the medium, a lot of alcohol, and it's kind of like this new, I don't know if it's new, but for me it certainly was. It was like a very new look at this platform of making content with a large group of people. Whereas I guess in the past, like I would compare it to like the film industry, where you have the rock stars of the film industry, right, who go to these parties and they really get wild and everything. And that's not how it was at GDC necessarily. But Ben, do you see where I'm kind of saying here? It's like
it's not so straight laced. Yeah,
yeah. It's not like the Pocket Protector nerds. You know, it's not that, and I don't think anybody conceptualizes it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, there are different crowds that go into it, just as there are like the AAA industry and like, I don't want to say the indie game industry, but you know what I'm trying to say. Like people who make AAA titles who are businessmen, and then like indie developers who are making games to try to advance the medium. Not saying that all AAA games are like for business only, but you know what I'm saying.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
I think
a better way to put it.
Yeah, most of the people we saw were people who were more interested in indie games, and people from our generation who grew up with games and wanted to be something taken a little more seriously. You want to see it like acknowledged as like an art form, basically.
Yeah.
And those are also people who are down with pizza and Ninja Turtles and partying and drinking. So like you go to things like the Wild Rumpus party that Fangamer had a booth at, and it's just a huge party of people jumping around and drinking and talking about games and just having a really good time, sharing ideas with each other while also making jokes and having a good old time.
Granted, you're in San Francisco also, so you're not going to see a lot of people walking around in business suits if they're younger.
Yeah, I imagine that that San Francisco is 24/7, just like it is around GDC time.
Yeah, except in the context of GDC, people are talking about games instead of music and the culture that's going on there. Even though I would like to think that San Francisco has a pretty good game culture scene going on. But yeah, that's pretty much what I was expecting, and it lived up to that. It was a pleasant surprise to see that that was the truth. So I was surprised in that sense.
Well, that's where, you know, Revision 3 and IGN and all them, that's where they're based in San Francisco.
Yeah, same with Double Fine and a couple others.
So tell me about why you guys were there. Like, what exactly were you doing there?
There was this party that was put on for, I'm assuming it was an after party.
Yeah.
Ben? Yeah, okay. It was an after party. I'm not really an authority to talk about this. I wish John Kay was here to explain it. But John had designed a shirt for the party called the Video Game Romantic Shirt. And
actually, he didn't design that.
He didn't?
No, they gave it to us to put on a shirt. So really, that's just sort of the breaking in to actually start working with them.
I see.
Yeah. And then, so they invited John to go and just sort of run a little shop while at the party.
Right. So they invited John to kind of run a miniature Fangamer booth in which we sold a couple different shirts, a couple different products. And that's pretty much what we were there doing. However, of course, once you're there, you're networking, you're meeting interesting people who work at studios that you've perhaps only heard of but never actually thought you'd meet somebody who works there. Yeah, that's pretty much what we were doing. And then Ben and I were dancing a lot.
Yeah, waving and dancing and trying to get that cheddar. So that's why, like, Jeff and John and everyone were there, but me, I was there on personal business. I'm trying to be a games composer. And you know what? I'm not even going to say trying. I am a video game composer. Because I wrote music for a video game. It's out. You can buy it. Anyway, I was trying to meet people and make contacts and meet other people who did what I did so I can, like, bounce ideas off them. I didn't actually get to talk to too many other composers, so that was one expectation that maybe fell a little short. But I played a show at the DNA Lounge under 8-Bit SF. Headed by Morgan from Crash Faster. He threw two parties called a Pow Pow that week. And I played the second of them. And, was pretty much there just trying to meet people and get that work.
Yeah. Speaking of games composers, one person I got to meet at the party, came up to the booth, was Jim Guthrie. He came up to the booth and he was... he was very nice. Yeah, I told him that we used some of his music on the podcast, and he was very excited to hear that.
Oh, that's good.
I was expecting. Oh, then he asked for money.
No. He was very kind.
No, he seems like he's probably a pretty cool dude.
No, he was a really down to earth fella. I got to talk to him for a very short period of time, but that was just one of a handful of people who I got to meet who. Who were very enthusiastic to talk to people at Fangamer and just very kind people, really good positive energy going on.
Yeah, everyone was really enthusiastic. I think that's a good word for GDC and at least the non-conference experience was enthusiasm. Because me and my friend James Montagna got to meet Keita Takahashi, the creator of Katamari Damacy and Nobi Nobi Boy. And as was demonstrated there, Tenya Wanya Teens, which is an amazing game that unfortunately will never come out on anything because it has like a proprietary controller that I doubt they're going to release like instructions on how to make or anything. But we got to meet him and talk to him. And James Montagna, he's a director and designer at WayForward Technologies, and he directed the Adventure Time game. And as soon as he talked to Keita, like, Keita recognized him and like it's like, oh, I love Adventure Time, and like they all freaked out and hugged, and it was beautiful, and that's just a cool thing to have happen, especially for him.
Yeah, like there was, I think, several games that were available to play at the Venus Patrol party. Mm-hmm. One of them was a very odd game that I didn't really realize was there until later in the evening, but I think it was called Sound Self.
Oh, that one.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. I remember actually when I walked into the room, because this was its own room.
Yeah, I'm isolated, pretty sure there were dudes on there tripping on something.
Yeah, it was very odd. So how this worked was you had two different visuals going on. You had one that I'm assuming from one to three players could be using, where you're controlling these visuals that are appearing on a projector that it's directly on a wall. You have a box with about 12 different knobs on it, and as you turn them in different directions, you'll get different visuals. And then there is a whole different projector that is shooting up at the ceiling. And to use this one, you lie down on the ground with from one to however many people, and they had a bunch of different like pillows and blankets out for people to lay on the ground. You look up at these visuals, and then it had microphones pointing down at you, and you were supposed to make noises, harmonize, or sing. I actually couldn't figure it out, but people were there making different noises, and I guess that also changed the visuals. It seemed like a game that appealed to a very specific demographic of people. But I thought it was interesting for a game. I was like, wow, you know, that's... If I saw that in a store, I'd be pretty... Oh, that's interesting.
It's very obvious. I think it's a little unfair to like to shoehorn it in like the druggy crowd or anything like that.
I wouldn't even call it that.
It definitely was an interesting video... like audiovisual experience that you could only see at a place like GDC or a party like this.
Right. Like to me, I wouldn't call it a game aimed at druggies. I would call it a game aimed at people who are into experimental gaming. Because that's really what it was to me. Something I never really considered before, but as I was playing it, I got this distinct impression of, I can't think of any other game out there where you can, as a group of people, create something by working together without just using a controller, you know, by using your voice, by using your eyes and your hands all at once and then trying to make something. I thought it was cool. I would buy it.
Yeah. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
So, Ben, would you say that you would have... maybe met more composers and people that you were interested in going to meet if you had actually gotten a full pass and were able to enter the GDC proper?
I don't know. That really depends. Like, I actually did have a patch.
You just didn't really use it?
I got one somehow. I just didn't use it. Mostly because I didn't know what I could have done with it, rather, because like there are so many different levels of badges that like grant you certain access to certain things. But even if my badge did get me access to like sessions and talks, I'm not sure would have been there for me. Like if there was like a sound design composer centric session or panel, I would have loved to go to that and like afterwards like talk to people or discuss things with others. But as it stands, I think. Like, I did meet other composers. The conversation just didn't turn, like, toward anything, what's the word? Like, educational or beneficial to our craft. We were basically just hanging out and drinking and having a good time, which is kind of good. It's kind of awesome. Like, making friends is a lot better than making business contacts, I think. So maybe it was a bit off for me to say that, like, my expectation wasn't met in that regard. But
yeah, I'd say that, like, in a place like that, getting to know people and just having a good time is a good foundation in case that if you end up wanting to make a business relationship out of it later, then good, you have a foundation for it already. And if you don't, then cool, you still have a friend.
Yeah.
I got to meet C148 and he gave me a business card that
C418.
He gave me a business card that said, if you want to work together and there's a contract involved, I'm out. what a good guy.
He is an interesting fellow.
He's great.
That is for sure. Yeah, he's great.
So we've already talked about what the atmosphere was like and sort of the people, but like, how would that compare to the atmosphere of, say, PAX or MAGFest? Like, for people who have been to those conventions and have more experience with that, how would that compare?
I wouldn't say it's all that different, personally. I think you have a group of people that are less on the fandom side for sure. Like less people who are like passionate about playing games, but more people who are passionate about making games. And those are the kind of people that I gravitate toward during like MAGFest and PAX anyway. So for me, it was kind of the same experience, just with a little more focus. And I mean, I think that's what GDC is. It's just a very focused thing for people who want to make games or want to be involved with the industry in some sort of way. So it's not that different. People are as enjoyable as ever, but we all have a goal, I guess.
Yeah, I was figuring it would be more relaxed in that regard because I'm sure you're still maybe trying to prove yourself to other people and all that stuff. But at PAX, yeah. You're trying to... Or if you're a developer, you're putting on a face for the actual consumers. At GDC, you are all the developers, usually. Mm-hmm. Or at least for the most part. So you can let your guard down and talk more candidly about a lot of things. So I would figure it would be a more relaxed thing rather than for the developers, at least, more of a business venture at PAX.
Yeah, I mean, it's less of a thing of proving yourself, for sure. Because, like, pretty much whenever you meet anyone at GDC, like, they ask your name and then what you do, like what you do for games. Like that is always a question you get. And if you don't do anything, I mean, you could simply say that, but like there's always an opening. People are looking to talk about games with you essentially at every turn. And so like, yeah, it's just a really big round table spanning a week.
Yeah, it seems to me like the difference between at PAX, you're the people who are supposed to know what you're doing. And, mm-hmm. At GDC, you're all aware that none of you really know what you're doing. You're just trying to figure it out all at the same time.
Yeah, some people anyway.
Maybe so. So, did you guys absorb any of the actual news coming out of the event? I know a lot of people in places have already reported on all the news that was coming out of the place. But as people who were right there next to it, was any of that leaking out, or was it all just focusing on the people and the parties and all that stuff?
I didn't get to talk to anybody extensively enough to get any kind of news out of them, though.
What about you, Ben?
It wasn't really about news at GDC, and that was maybe something I wasn't expecting, because you always hear like these stuff about like reveals and stuff, and I came back hearing everyone pretty much excited about like the Metal Gear Solid 5 trailer that I still haven't seen. But GDC, I realized, is less about news and reveals and big companies doing things, more than like people discussing the industry and like trying to find out what to do next. When I talked to Anthony and Ashley, they said like the most important thing to take out of GDC was basically like a next step. And for them, a lot of that came with like the advocacy track and like the one reason to be discussions and stuff like that. And I think, yeah, it's less about the news. Like, people aren't there to get news, unless you're, like, a journalist or something. But, yeah, the discussions are elsewhere.
So, I guess my final question is, would you go back and visit properly with a full badge and trying to get the full GDC experience, or would you go back at all, or would you stick to pretty much what you guys did this time, which was stay on the periphery?
I kind of lucked into a badge, and I didn't really use it other than to like hang out with my friends at like the Cryomar booth and stuff. So I would probably do the same as I did this year, which is just go and hang out on the periphery. And that's mostly because I didn't know what I could have done with the badge, and I don't know what that would have gotten me. If I do get another badge, I'm definitely going to try and see what I can do with it this time. But I think now that I know what to expect, because I did not know what to expect at all going into this GDC, I didn't know what the whole experience was going to be like. Now that I do have a frame of reference for that, I can attack it properly next year. And I'm probably not going to get a badge, because I mean, you can go for free and get the benefits you want if that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, I would definitely go if I had a badge. I enjoyed the time that I got there this year. Just on the outside of the event itself. But having done all that, I feel a bit more apt to go there and see the talks and check out the games and so on. I feel that much more educated about it because I didn't know what kind of a scene it was, you know, leading up to it. So yeah, if other people are interested, see if you can go for free and get a good sense of it before you spend a lot of money on it, I guess.
Yeah. Most people that I talk to about GDC, again, they pretty much urge you to go without a badge. Like, I know most of my friends here did, and yeah, I mean, it's, you're not really missing anything. You can, like if there are people around you who do go to the sessions and talks and stuff, you can always ask them about it, because they're all pretty fired up about it usually and very willing to talk about it and what they think about it. So going without a badge, I think, is a very feasible option.
It's a neat little event. I'd go again.
Yeah. I think it's a very important event, but one that will do very good.
Points to make before we head out. Let's see. First of all, we have a voicemail from our good friend Kevin.
Hey, Fan Gamer Podcast. It's me, Kevin Chai. I wasn't paying attention, so I don't know if you're doing a topic this week, but I've been playing Dot Hack, and it's really cool. It's like an online game, but I don't have to deal with actual people. And I don't know. It's really long, but I've been playing it for a while, and it's really something. Anyway, that's it for now. See you later.
All right. Thank you so much, Kevin Chai. I got to meet Kevin Chai for the first time ever at PAX in Boston, which we didn't talk about at all.
Yeah, that's all right.
Yeah.
But so, so we're going to be posting up a lot of the upcoming topics later today. So by the time this podcast hits the air, there will already be a bunch of topics on the Fangamer Forum to see what's coming up. On a related note, anybody who wants to apply to be a podcast contributor, there is a topic about that on the forums as well. So if you'd like to participate and make segments for us and get paid to do so, there's details on that, and it would help us an awful lot to make this podcast a better podcast.
Or a little at least detail on that also, as for making segments, you don't have to make segments for shows that we're making. You could just make a segment about what you're interested in.
Right.
And we may even write a whole show topic around it if we like it.
Right. And final note, just this morning, the morning that we are recording this podcast, we learned that Earthbound is being released on the virtual console on the Wii U.
In North America and Europe.
Yes, I mean, because it was already out on the Wii U in Japan, but we did a big thing about that. But now, you're going to be able to play it in English. You'll be able to, everybody is going to be able to go out, buy yourself a Wii U, buy yourself a copy of Earthbound virtual console, and show Nintendo that they should have done this years ago.
Yes. Years ago.
And now we'll have a whole nother generation of people who Earthbound will hopefully resonate with.
And the price of a Wii U plus Earthbound might be a little bit less than what an actual Earthbound cartridge costs on eBay.
And you get a whole console to boot.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, cool.
So thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Fangamer Podcast. Did you have any final notes, Jeff?
Buy a power mitt.
Oh, yes. Well, Fangamer news, there's power mitts in the store. But I was going to say, next week is thrifting for games.
Right, yeah. Speaking of trying to find an affordable cartridge of Earthbound, if you can go off into your local yard sales and maybe find a parent who doesn't know about things like eBay or looking up the prices of things, or really just doesn't care, you know, they might have a copy of Earthbound out there for $2 because, hey, this is a freaking old game. They're just going to get rid of it. And
kids are off of college. Come on.
Yeah, exactly.
Get rid of that stuff. Well, we're going to be talking about thrifting for games. Good deals, good steals, way overpriced stuff, where you can find games. And if you got stories about that and you want to send us a voicemail or a segment, please do so. I know I will.
Yeah?
At 503-446-CAST.
All right, thanks everybody for listening. Y'all have a wonderful day.
Rest in peace.